Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. Also by One Green World, a nursery offering hard-to-find fruiting plants designed to help you grow your own food and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. Now located in Portland at 6469 Southeast 134th. For a color catalog, the number to call is 1-877-353-4028 or online at onegreenworld.com. Stay tuned for the Dirt Bag.
Good morning. We've reached the second Wednesday of the month. It's time for the Dirt Bag. Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. Here beside me is Jim Gilbert. Full disclosure, One Green World is an underwriter of this program.
And Jim is connected to One Green World.
Yes, indeed. How are you, Jim?
Great. Beautiful weather. I can't believe it. I mean, it's just like with this early mornings, I'm up at 5:30.
Yeah.
I can't be in bed. It's too nice out, you know. I got to go out and do something.
Well, guess what was happening in our neighborhood this morning? If you're listening to OPB,
yes,
you know about this.
A bear.
Yes.
Wow.
That's my hood.
Do bears pick cherries and bother your fruit trees?
No, but I thought they would be tempted by my bee larvae.
Mm.
Tasty, protein-rich morsels.
Well, black bears, I used to run into black bears when I lived in Hood River. And one thing nice about black bears is they're really scared of people. They're not like grizzly bears that, you know, get out of my way. I'm coming through.
I haven't heard any more than that's what the area was. But there's a lot of wild area there along the Columbia Slough. And they're really making that a nice corridor. They're really fixing that up. There's some great wild areas, natural areas there. So it doesn't surprise me. I've had coyotes, and I saw one, followed one for a couple of blocks. It was on a fast trot right in front of my house.
Well, the creatures I'm not in favor of in cities are deer.
You haven't seen those?
Good. Good.
That would wreak havoc for many gardens there.
Yeah. Corvallis, they walk around. They have more freedom than dogs do. They don't have to license the deer, and they just walk around in neighborhoods and just eat everybody's food. You know, like you'd think you'd want to put them in trucks and take them someplace away.
Well, if they can. Who knows? That's Corvallis. Anyway, we've got a show for you today here.
Yep.
Our plant of the month is the same thing that we'll be talking about for this morning, in the first half, I should say, about what we can plant now for fall, winter, and even next spring harvests, veggies, and fruits. Jim will be able to chime in there about what we can plant now. We've got tickets to give away to our garden stumper winners, and I think we might just throw those stumpers out early so we can talk about some of these later if we get the answers. But these are a pair of tickets. We have up to three pair of tickets to the June 26th showing. I believe that's a Thursday, June 26th, at the Hollywood Theater, the Portland Eco Film Festival series. This film is called GMO-OMG, and it's about roughly speaking from memory here, the kind of the corporate takeover of seeds and where that might lead us or not lead us, as the case may be. So that's GMO-OMG. Pretty good
good
title there. All right.
Yeah, important issue.
Right. We will also talk about, I will also talk about what's going on in the honeybee hive this week or this month. A lot of things. This is probably the busiest month for bees. And your questions. If you got any gardening questions to run by Jim or me, please give us a call, 503-231-8187. I'm just going to go for these three stumpers here.
Okay.
Right off the bat here.
All right.
Tammy, can you hit us with the stumper music? Yeah, she's ready. The I've got three questions here, so take your pick as whatever you want here. First off, what is the variety of green bean that canneries in the Willamette Valley have used for decades? It's a standby. It's what I picked as a kid. It's now mostly, I think, bush beans that are harvested for canning, but it's still the same variety. So what variety of green bean? This might be just too easy, but what's the variety of strawberry that, by Oregonian standards, stands head and shoulders above the rest? Eh?
At least okay. Ankles and feet.
Okay, yeah, if it was a hot, dry year, right. And because, and I'll talk about this in just a little bit, the week of June 16th through 22nd is National Pollinator Week. What plant is, I believe this is the case, the sole source of food for the monarch butterfly larvae? Now, it might be the adult. In my age, I can't remember these things. But it's the plant that is most commonly associated with the monarch butterfly, either as a sole source for its larvae or for the adult. The adult will also eat some of the pollen and nectar, mostly nectar, but they're pollinators too. So give us a call, 503-231-8187, if you know the answers to those and you want a pair of tickets to the film, the screening on June 26th at the Hollywood Theater. All right, so National Pollinator Week is coming right up. I have this fact sheet here, but I did forget my reading glasses, but I'm not totally blind here. It was designated 7 years ago by the U.S. Senate. Would that put it in the George Bush realm? And I think it would, 2007.
2007.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's one thing.
Whatever that means, I mean.
Okay, we got an answer-er, as Tammy so eloquently put it. Good morning.
Morning. Is that me?
Yes, that's you.
Okay, Kentucky Wonder. Is that the answer?
No, it's not.
Okay.
This is not Kentucky.
Jim.
And actually, a small clue is that it's a geographic name associated with Oregon.
Yes. Yes.
I don't know.
Okay. That's okay, well, good. That's a good guess.
That's a good guess, yes.
I've grown Kentucky Wonders, but I prefer this other variety.
Yeah.
This is the one that I grow. It's still the one that I go to and grow.
Yeah,
so
I actually plant an Italian variety.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of different beans, and it's worth experimenting. Yeah. But
yeah, when we were kids, when there were still kids, buses would line up in front of the school and take us off to pick beans.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's when this variety I presume we probably picked.
Yeah, I would think so too.
Yeah, that's made right. No money.
Okay, Philip has the right answer, eh?
Yes, I think it's a Sandy Am green bean. Is there also a Sandy Am tomato?
There is a Sandy Am tomato, but that's not the variety of a green bean as far as I know. It's a canner is called Sandy Am.
Oh, okay.
That's actually the canner, the company.
All right, well, thank you.
Yep, good guess. These are good guesses.
Yeah,
here.
That was that fit the clue.
Yes.
Sandy Am River, or something like that.
That's right.
But it's not a river.
No, yeah. Okay, Victoria.
Yes, I've got the answer for the strawberry.
Okay.
It's Hood.
Yay! Ding, 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 ding.
I bought some yesterday from a roadside stand.
All right. Well, if you stay on the line, Tammy will take your name, and it will be on the guest list at the Hollywood Theater there on the 26th. So, good going. That's Hood strawberry.
Yep.
All right.
I know the others, too, but I won't say them.
Yeah, you can only see the movie once at a time.
Okay.
Give it five more minutes. And then yeah. So, right. and perhaps another clue on that first one is it is a body of water.
Yes.
But it is not a river.
That's correct. That's correct. And I don't know if one has anything to do with the other.
No.
I mean,
from what I recall, if I were, because I used to actually swim in the body of water, which this name,
yeah,
that is named after.
That's right. That's right. And which Jim is, was, and we'll give you another clue when, after we talk to this person.
Okay.
Greg or Craig?
I believe it's Blue Lake.
Yay.
That's it.
Got it.
Blue Lake.
Strawberries.
And, wait. That's all you get. Just one answer here. Yep. And we already had the hood and the strawberries. So good. So if you want to go to see the movie, stay on the line and Tammy will take your number. I mean, your name. And we'll put it on the guest list there. So,
okay.
Good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I wonder if any listeners have gone swimming in Blue Lake.
Oh, I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
It was very popular when I was a kid.
And why was the bean developed here? I should have done
well,
a little more homework.
Well, the beans were grown in that. I mean, there was that whole area of east of Portland,
yes,
along the Columbia River was,
yeah,
just, you know, it was all bean fields. You know?
But I was picking these near Eugene.
Well, they did.
In
the
southern,
you know, they spread south, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, Blue Lake, I suspect, probably was because it was probably,
yeah,
really,
well,
grown,
you know,
Blue
thought
Lake.
The thought hurt, occurred to me, well, maybe it was named just after Crater Lake because it's blue.
Yeah, but
Jim, get thumbs down on that one, huh?
Yeah, I don't think
yeah,
so.
It's not a bean growing area there.
No.
Okay, so we still need the one answer for the source of food most closely related with the monarch butterfly in honor of Pollinator Week.
Well, it's great. I mean, I'm really pleased that so many listeners called in with answers. We've had some stumpers that have, I think, are still somewhere on the books. They never got answered. So,
and we can never remember from
we
month
can't remember
to month
what they were.
Right. So, in honor of National Pollinator Week, just to continue on with this, there are some things that we can do here. I'll just read you a little bit for the what we can do to help with the pollinators, because it's not just honeybees now. There's a lot of other pollinators too, including other native bees and butterflies and bats. We don't have a whole lot of bat pollination going on here, but it does all helps. I think worldwide the number one pollinator of plants, we'll use this in a year or so, a stumper, are beetles year-round, worldwide, but not so much here in Oregon because we don't have as many beetles to do that. But so what kind of native plants can we plant that are good pollinating attracting plants? Are just a few here. I'll mention, or maybe a dozen here. Tall Oregon grape. Let's see. Different types of ceanothus. This says wedge leaf or red stem ceanothus. Ocean spray, which it has foamy white flower clusters. Red flowering currant for its ability to attract hummingbirds, which is one of the earliest blooming plants. The Nootka rose, Oregon crabapple, bitter cherry, thimbleberry, yarrow. This one that has the ability to attract bees and is a food source for the monarch butterfly. See, I'm not going to mention what that is yet.
No.
Goldenrod is a late summer bloomer. So often many of these, and most of these actually can be found at nurseries that sell native plants, or even some nurseries that don't sell. That aren't known for native plants. So those are a few of the pollinators that are good, native pollinators that are good for that. Okay. I was going to take a musical break here, but Tammy is still on the. Oh, she can do it here? She's still on the phone there. Okay. We'll be talking about fall and winter vegetable gardens here in just a moment. And fruit gardens. I'm sure there's things that we can be planting now. Anything that's kind of potted, that's not bare root, it's okay to plant now, isn't it?
Well, you know, we're getting to that point where it starts getting a little more dicey. I generally speaking, I'd probably wait now until October, you know, late September.
Fruit-wise?
Yeah, because you got to be, you know, if you want to pay, if you're going to pay attention, you got to, because there's a danger of the plant drying out.
I see.
When it comes out of a pot, this is something to pay attention to. What the potted plant, of course, doesn't have contact with the soil around it for a couple of weeks after you plant it. So you've got to loosen up the roots and then put the soil back in the hole. But immediately that plant is still getting all its moisture from the pot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when you water it, you've got to be sure to water the center where the pot was, or is, I mean, that potting soil is, because if you don't do that, you try to water the soil around it, it can dry out in the center and the plant can die, even though it's you're watering like mad in the surface, the area around it. So it's a little more dicey now. I mean, it's definitely, you know, planting seeds, garden seeds, so forth is perfect. But, you know, I'd probably be a little more, pay attention and be careful if planting anything that's from a larger plant from a pot.
So even these native plants oftentimes are, we say, you know, they can survive without water, but that's after the first year or two.
Yeah.
They've got to get established
right.
for that. So don't think that you can plant it and ignore it.
Right.
Especially with...
And that part about loosening up the roots, too, is very important. You know, the people, if you plant a potted plant, be sure to, you know, get the roots out away from that, from the pot where they're usually mm-hmm. circled around. And if you just insert plant into the ground...
It'll continue to circle around almost.
It won't work.
Yeah. Right. Okay, we've got Esteban on the line for... Yes, Esteban, you got the answer to our question?
Yes, for the... milkweed.
That's it.
Yes.
Monarchs.
That's right. a very important source.
And Fuji Farms out there where the Troutdale Airport is now used to grow the largest amount of blue lake beans anywhere in the neighborhood.
Do you know the origin of Blue Lake, though? Of where the...
Well, I thought it was development through Oregon Extension Service, I thought.
That's kind of what I thought, too, but I just assumed that and have no basis for that now that I think about it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I'll try to remember to do a little research on that.
Yeah.
Because that'd be easy.
Oh, well, thanks for being here with all the information.
You bet. And if you want to give your name to Tammy, then we can put your name on the guest list for the screening.
Sure.
Of that. Okay, stay on the line. She'll get that from you.
Maybe there's a Blue Lake in Kentucky.
I wouldn't doubt it.
But I think that's when this one out here.
Unless they're all brown there or something like that.
Yeah, and actually, Blue Lake, when I used to swim in it, I don't remember it being a very, very blue. It wasn't like one of those mountain lakes by any means. But
and that was some years ago now, some decades ago now.
You're talking about me swimming in
the
lake?
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
And things have changed. Maybe it's better now.
I have no idea. You know, I haven't been there since I was a teenager.
Well, it's quite developed.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot. I mean, there's Blue Lake Park, a metro park that is huge.
Yeah.
You know, they have concerts there. And
really?
Yep. Okay. Well, when we come back, we'll talk about fall and winter vegetable gardens. And our theme today is, for all of our music, has to do with the sun, because here... comes the sun, but you know, I'm not going to play that. No.
We'll play it in our heads. How's that?
That's right. No, these are very good too. This is the first one is a Climax Blues Band called Towards the Sun.
Okay.
Give it a spin here. See if Tammy can pick that up for me. Yeah, she's still on the phone in there. Hey, Tammy, can you play my first one there for me? Yeah, Towards the Sun. She's going to get it here. There we go.
I'm gonna do the thing.
Towards the Sun, Climax Blues Band. That might be their debut album, 1971, but it still kind of sounds kind of fresh.
That's really good. Glenn, you have such great taste in music. I when I come here for my 1 hour a month, it's like I learn so much about music. That,
well, stay tuned. Know. We've got more coming.
Good.
More coming there.
Great.
All right. Well, we're talking about fall and winter vegetable gardens with Jim Gilbert here. And if you have gardening questions, 503-231-8187. Sorry, I forgot my glasses. 503-231-8187. You know, I'll start out with a question here. I talked to my brother Brian, who lives in Eugene, and he said that his apricot died over the winter. And he had a variety that he got from Cresswell. Mm-hmm. Would you happen to know anything? There's a variety down there, or is there a variety called Cresswell? Or
you know, I was at a Eugene garden show a couple of years ago, three, 4 years ago, and got a variety that somebody thought was a pretty good one for there. And I don't remember the name of it now because it died right away.
Oh.
apricots of the genus Prunus are definitely the most difficult, I think, to grow here. Yeah, and we have one called Puget Gold that came from the Western Washington, and you know it hangs in there. I have some promising ones. I hope eventually we'll be brought over from Ukraine, actually, that are late blooming, but that should help because one of the problems is they bloom early and we have a frost afterwards that can hurt them. But it's more disease issues. They don't like the wet climate. If you had a chance to put up some kind of like a haygrove tunnel or something where you could, and I want to try this.
What's a haygrove tunnel?
A haygrove tunnel is basically an inexpensive hoop house.
Oh, okay.
So you can keep the rain off things.
Just the rain.
And it can add some heat too because it's got a plastic cover on it. You know, that I think would work. But, you know, most people don't have those. And so apricots are challenging. And, you know, I love apricots. I love apricots almost as much as I love figs. And you can't eat, you know, an apricot, if it's not ripe, is not really worth eating to me. And
no.
That's all you can buy here. Or, unless you go get them off of a tree or from somebody who's a farmer that's got them.
Well, Brian said, that's my brother, said that he would get them, he wouldn't get a crop every year. And I asked how big his crop was. And he said, maybe 20.
Yeah.
he's got a couple acres there, so the space isn't an issue for him, but I wouldn't waste that much space on
20 apricots.
Right.
I think we need to have periodic journeys east and just go there with a van and looking back boxes of ripe apricots, just juice just pouring out of them, and just have a big party, you know, dancing and music and apricots.
I went to school at Eastern Oregon University in La Grande, and one of the places where I stayed there off campus, they had an apricot tree, and I remember just gorging myself on those. And La Grande it's cold winters there.
Yeah. Yeah. That doesn't hurt apricots. They love the cold. I mean, they grow, you know, Central Asia.
That's what you said there.
But boy, when they're ripe, but you can't transport them. That's why the ones that we buy, like right now, California apricots, you know, they look nice.
Yeah.
But they just don't have the flavor.
All right. Well, we've got a phone call. Good morning, Jerry. You're with the Dirtbag.
Yeah, thank you. So while I was looking for the information on Blue Lake, I couldn't call in to answer Milkweed, and I missed my opportunity. But I still have the answer from Blue Lake. So it actually comes from water seepage in the groundwater seepage, and actually a lot of hard surface, surface runoff in general. But of course, around there, hard surface runoff is a real serious problem because the development is right up to the south side of the lake in real heavy density. And basically, it's been having a long-term water quality problem because of some lack of circulation, but they do have sort of a small weir dam where they can let water off once in a while.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot of hydrology maintenance just to keep water quality okay, but it's had many days when it's been really poor. So I really don't think myself ever swimming in it. I wouldn't tell anybody else to it.
Yeah.
I do paddle boat in it occasionally, you know, and I'm a big bird watcher, so it's actually a pretty good place for that.
Yeah.
But
Jim, you probably swim in there, 60 years ago?
Let's not talk about that.
Okay.
A few years ago.
I mean, 16 years ago.
16, yeah. But there was a, I don't know if it's still there, but there was an official kind of dock area for swimming. You know, I mean, it was a diving boards. It was the whole.
I don't know that they have that now.
Yeah, I mean, and I remember trying, of course, I was really into survival in those days, so I would swim one length of this sort of confined area. I would swim one with my arms behind my back and only using my legs, and then I would go the opposite direction, just my arms, and keep my legs still. And
wow.
See, yeah, I was tough, you know. I was like,
yeah, and believe it or not, one of the big problems is actually buildup of an alkaline base.
Uh-huh.
So, and then, of course, a lot of algae.
Huh.
So, you know, it wouldn't be bad if someone came up with a real plan long-term to get water quality there without, you know, dumping a bunch of weird chemicals to offset.
Grow more green beans around there. So
you got it. More natural process for
all right.
Anyway.
All right.
So
well,
I thought I'd want to tap you in.
Thanks for the info there.
No problem.
All right. Well, I'll still have to do the – I thought he was going to have some information on the origin of the bean, too. But – all right. Maybe Sam does. Good morning, Sam. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Talk to us.
I was going to say, if you take the back road to Hermiston, peel off of Interstate 84 and take the old highway into Hermiston.
Yeah.
Through Irrigon.
Yep.
You have apricot orchards, and they'll give you the ones that fall off the tree.
Jeez, those would be dead ripe, too.
Yes, they are.
I think we need field trips. I'm looking for a 15 passenger van. You know,
it's
we could,
not that far.
You know, really, it isn't.
Really, you know, we could do that. We could have like apricot parties and just, you know, just take
right.
a bunch of folks
and
head east.
What time of year would that be, Sam? Was
that's
it Sam?
Like I think like after July.
Yeah. Uh huh. All right. I'm going over to visit my friend Bill in Walla Walla. He's starring in the Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh.
Tevye.
Nice.
And that'll be in July, so...
check it out.
We'll go the back road there through Umatilla and Irrigon there. So, well, that's a great tip.
And I don't know if I told you about our special little Seabury project in Goldendale.
Well, you mentioned that.
Yeah, and so on the way to that, when you cross the river at Biggs Junction on Highway 97, on the Washington side, there's a fruit stand and an apricot orchard that's right along the river. So when I go, I'll give you reports, updates on that.
Well, I want more than reports. I want apricots.
Well, that's asking a lot. But
okay.
We could take a trip to Goldendale and visit the Seabury Orchard.
I noticed you didn't bring any snacks in today, Jim.
Oh, man.
Not
I thought
much.
About it, but it's just...
Raspberries. We're getting to raspberries now, that's for sure. And, of course, the strawberries are full tilt.
Full tilt.
I got some strawberries, too, from a stand in Boring.
Yeah.
And they were relatively small. So I asked the owner, and I asked why. And he said it was a cold winter. So this plants just didn't do very well. They're still tasty, though. They were hoods.
I have thought for years, even when I was a political candidate, that we should be sending strawberries to California. Because as most of us know, when the first strawberries show up from California, they look like strawberries.
Yeah.
You know, they even have a slight fragrance like strawberries. But there's nothing after that. I mean, you can pour all the strawberry flavor on, I suppose. But boy, there's just nothing there. And, you know, the thing that's interesting to me is that the strawberries from California come in a nice, clear plastic package with a label and all that. And our strawberries are always sold in the sort of, you know, disreputable little paper things.
Oh, shelf life is terrible.
Yeah. But wouldn't it be cool to send something down there and say that the Oregon strawberries, the strawberry with taste.
Yeah.
So anyway.
We don't want strawberries that look good. We want strawberries that taste good.
I had last night, I had strawberries and frozen yogurt. And oh, man.
All right. Well, we're not getting to our main topic yet, but we'll do that after this break. I do want to mention about one thing that I have an experiment going. You know, for years we've talked about bagging apples, you know, putting on either the bags or the fruit socks or whatnot. Well, this year I did it, and I'm experimenting. I bagged the tree.
With the whole tree?
I bagged the tree. That's right.
That's a big fruit sock.
Well, I used floating row cover and just wound it around two layers. It was pretty wide, and it was it's a dwarf tree, almost freestanding, so it's not espaliered or anything like that. And wrapped it around and held it together with clothespins,
mm-hmm.
And of course, I won't know until I take it off the end of August to see how effective it is. But I'm pretty darn positive that it's going to be effective.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's no way they can get in there.
No.
Or I suppose they could if they went to the very ground and then crawled and crawled and crawled. But I have it wrapped around the trunk pretty tightly, too.
Tunnels. That's what they do. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
I bagged up some cherries a while ago. I bought some onion bags.
Oh yeah,
just some smaller ones, and because the birds in my area, they're just looking for everything they can get. So I had a beautiful crop of cherries, compact Stella, and I thought, well, I want the cherries this year, at least a lot of them. So I bagged them.
All right, one note here to pass along that the Portland Fruit Tree Project, and we've had Katie on, the executive director for the Portland Fruit Tree Project, and they glean fruit and. We'll offer that then to the Oregon Food Bank. And you can get more information at Portland Fruit Tree Project dot whatever. Mm. But I will bet you that they have not gleaned too many apricots.
I would bet that too.
Okay. I'm not going to bet.
Unless much. At least in the Portland area. I mean, they could go east if they went to east. They could glean.
Yeah, Oregon.
They would just make so many friends here if they went and got boxes of apricots.
Ooh, boy, wouldn't they? All right, so here's part two of our Sun series. It's Jimmy Reed, old Jimmy Reed recording.
The sun is shining.
Well, the sun is shining, but she isn't, apparently. Jimmy Reed there. Okay, Jim, fall and winter vegetable gardens. We live in an area here where we can plant a good 10 months of the year, maybe harvest 11 months of the year, maybe even 12. Not much that we can be taking out of the ground in December, but we can certainly eat year-round. We can store potatoes and squash and things like that. Do you have a vegetable garden, Jim?
This year, every year we put a little bit more in. For a while, we weren't doing one. I mean, we'd get out all the best of intentions. We'd plant some stuff, and then we wouldn't have time to take care of the weeds. But this year, we've got some things going.
All right.
And one of the things that is winter squash. We're still eating squash, winter squash, butternut squash we grew last year.
Good for you. Well, that's a good point to make here about winter squash, in that there are some varieties that hold on very well. And butternut is one of the best, maybe the best. And I've forgotten if it's, the maxi or the peppy. There's different genres of it. And let's see, the acorn squash does not last very long at all. Those should be some of the first ones that you eat. They'll mold correctly. So squash doesn't happen to be one of those plants that can be planted now, however, or should be planted now. Just a little late. If you had starts, I'd do it. You could try it.
Yeah. In fact, I'm probably going to try it.
Okay.
Because I'm late.
It's only June 11th here anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
But when we talk about fall and winter crops, there, for example, broccoli, there are some species that take some 270 days to mature. like purple sprouting broccoli. The whole idea is that you plant it now, it will grow somewhat pretty good, and it will survive the winter. And then in January, February, it really starts to put on growth. And then in February and March, you've got broccoli to eat, purple sprouts.
Nice.
It'd be a huge plant. I mean, it'd be 4 feet in square.
Wow.
With just these little tiny florets at the top. It doesn't make a big head, but it's beautiful. They turn green when they're cooked, but it's a wonderful plant. But that's something that you would actually start now, June and into to July. I've got a whole list here of things, and I'll just go down these, and we'll give you our take on that. If you have any questions, please feel free to give us a call, 503-231-8187. Beans. What I would suggest now to plant are not pole beans, but bush beans. They take less time to mature, and you'll get a good crop. They're not hardy at all. So once we get a frost, they're done, and rains really aren't very good for them either. But it's a good one technique is for a lot of these things is as you're harvesting lettuce, for example, or your peas are coming out in the next month. Throw in beans there. That's a good place for that. Beets are a variety. There are winter keeper type varieties of beets, although what I do, my favorite, once again, is Red Ace. It's a hybrid, and it can stay in the year, stay in the ground until we're going to have a hard, if we're going to have a hard freeze. They're pretty hardy until, I mean, they're probably 25 degrees or so, but they turn pretty harsh if we get some frozen ground. Oftentimes, we don't really get freezing ground, particularly if you mulch them. But so what I do is just plant a lot of beets for that, and you can still plant beets now. That's fine. In fact, I'm going to have to plant some more because I either had poor germination or fungal. I had kind of what's that fungal disease? Napping off. It seems kind of strange outside, but it might have been just slugs that were girdling the plants there, and it didn't get a good germination of those, so I'll be planting more of those. Broccoli is another plant that you can plant in succession every month till probably August. Maybe even in September you could get by with that, particularly if you start them earlier and just hold on to them, keep potting them into a little bit bigger pots, and then put them in when you some space opens up in the garden. You harvest your garlic. Let's throw in some broccoli starts there. Brussels sprouts take a little bit longer, and they need to be seeded by July 1st if you like Brussels sprouts. Actually, I like Brussels sprouts. They're harder to grow because of the aphid problem. Hey, let's try bagging Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, sure.
I think there could be a market for this. You just make big socks of various, like fruit socks, but of various sizes.
People with big feet, they might have a...
Hey, watch who you're talking about there. Yeah, get the queen size nylons there. Okay, we better move on.
Yep.
Cabbage. Generally, you go to the market or look in a seed catalog, and you can have cabbage that should be planted in the spring, in the summer, or even in the fall for spring harvest. They'll overwinter. They're pretty tough cookies there. Many of the brassicas can do that. Chard is still time to plant chard seeds. Plenty of time. Here we are. It's only June 11th. It seems like it's later in the summer to me. I think because we haven't had our typical low pressure kind of gray, rainy weather.
I know. I mean, the Rose Festival came too early.
Yeah. Good point there. Yeah.
I know. It's like that's sort of like the we always figure it's going to rain on Rose Festival, and then summer's going to come.
Yeah.
And we've had summer for a week before Rose Festival came.
It's going to feel more like it this next few, starting Thursday, I guess. We're going to have measurable rain for several days, as I read. But next week, then, back into the mid-70s.
Yeah. Well, like we could handle a little rain.
I've started irrigating and things like that. But okay, Chinese cabbage, best planted in late July for a fall crop. Chinese cabbage doesn't take very long to grow, obviously, there. A good variety there. I have Chinese King is a variety there. I've just grown that a couple of times, Chinese cabbage. Carrots, you can still seed those. You can seed those probably every month until September. You get a good germination there. They can survive the cold winter, and especially with some mulch. And then they'll start growing again in the spring. It's pretty nice to harvest that. I prefer the Nantes variety, the Nantes from France. That's how I remember how to pronounce that. and they're longer. They tend to have blunt points, ends, I should say.
Yeah.
And I like the flavor of those.
Yeah, they're good. I remember.
And once again, with those, I just plant one crop and then just thin them. In fact, that's what I started doing yesterday. I did one thinning and thinned them to about, 3/4 to an inch apart. And I left a little heavier stand because I have a big problem with slugs thinning for me. Mm-hmm. And they don't thin. They just mow them down. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to kind of hedge my bets a little bit.
What if you could train slugs?
Oh, well, I have. Here's where the good stuff is. How would you train them, Jim?
Well, you know, like a little electric shock if they go to the wrong, you know, if they... Oh. You know, they have to go this direction, not that direction.
If you eat the dandelions, then you don't get a shock.
Right.
All right, you work on that.
All right.
Report back.
Okay.
Cauliflower is similar to broccoli and cabbage in that there are different varieties that will mature at different times. And you can look at the seed packet and it'll say days to maturity, you know, 76, 85, 95, 180, 270. That's a long time to be in the ground there. Well, chicory and corn salad are on this list here, but I've never grown either of those, so at least not on purpose. Chicory can be a weed. Garlic is planted in the fall. I think it's time to harvest garlic. My garlic that has not had any supplemental water, the husks are drying at the bottom. And if we leave, I want to get them out of the ground, and I might recommend this, that you get them out of the ground and before these rains come. Because mm-hmm. the problem that I have is the heads rotting in the ground or getting a fungal disease at that point, which is rotting. Mm. So I'm going to do that either today or tomorrow. Today. Kale can still be planted, seeded now, even outside, I think. Kohlrabi, the same thing from that seed until mid-July for a fall crop. Leeks can be planted in the spring for a fall harvest or in the summer and fall for a spring harvest. If you plant them in May, then you can have leeks for Thanksgiving.
So if you plant kale now, would you be harvesting it in the fall?
Well, maybe a little bit before that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they grow pretty quickly.
Kale's good stuff.
It's one of those superfoods, they say.
Yeah.
Chock full of nutrients. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Lettuce can be seeded about every 2 weeks until mid-September, probably even later than that. The problem we get with growing good lettuce is we just don't have the light levels that are needed to make a good stand of lettuce. Mustard greens and other greens, yeah, same. Treat them like lettuce. They can keep going for a while. Onions, my rule of thumb for overwintering onions, particularly Walla Wallas, is I start them generally the end of July or into August, into little seedlings, and then transplant them out in September. They'll overwinter. They're hardy. And then you'll have a nice big onion crop ready for your Easter Day barbecue. Mm. Oh, wait a minute. I'm mixing my holidays here, aren't I? Yes. Depends when Easter is, I guess.
Yeah, probably barbecuing in Easter is not too common.
Okay, parsley can be seeded here anytime. Just scatter some seeds out there. They generally do pretty well. And peas can be seeded for a fall crop, although you have to have the right weather, I think, to get peas in and a good crop there. I might suggest ones that, not the big pole peas, but maybe bush peas or something like that. Do they just take long, a little less long? The problem is it's just too hot for cool pea germination. That's what pea seeds want, cool. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and it's just too warm. So if you wanted to baby them along and shade them and water them all the time, then you know, you can do it. That's what I have to say about that, Jim.
That's very useful, Glenn.
All right.
It actually inspired me to try a couple more things. I used to do a fairly extensive garden, and then I got into gardening for a living and stopped doing the gardening for fun.
Yeah. But, you know, it's the reward is not just the gardening.
Yes. Well, I really
else do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's something like eating your own food, you know, bringing in something from the outdoors and putting on the table. And it's really a great pleasure.
Satisfying.
Yeah.
There. Okay. Well, we'll wrap up part three of our sun series here. This is from Joan Armatrading. This is from her album Show Some Emotion. This is Get in the Sun. Get in the sun. All right. But put on the sunblock.
Sit myself right down and relax. Oh, baby, I wanna take it real easy, and that's a fact. I got my glasses of water pulling, got the shades up in my eyes. Don't try to wait for the desert tonight. Oh, 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 oh,
get up, get out, get in the sun, Joan Armatrading. Okay, Robert, you're with the Dirtbag. What's on your mind?
Hi, guys. I love peas, snow peas and sugar snaps especially.
Mm-hmm.
And I planted some about 3 weeks ago that took at least 2 weeks to sprout up. Then I planted some just less than a week ago, and they're already coming up. And last year I put in about, I start putting them in early and I find they don't come up at all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then last year I planted some, and I believe it was maybe my third crop I planted, and it was maybe even July before I put the seeds in, the first part of July. I just thought, you know what, I'm going to try it. And they grew the very best of any peas I planted. I didn't overly water them any more than I watered anything. They grew fast, they grew lush, and I was eating peas until the 1st of November. And I think that whole thing about peas being loving the cold, I think that's an old wives' tale from what I have done myself.
Well, where are yours? Are they in direct sun?
I'm in Portland. I'm in Hillsdale.
I mean, were the peas in direct sun?
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
In direct sun.
Yeah.
Good all day sun.
Well,
they grew wonderful.
Great. You know, the peas, depending on what kind of pea you grow, there are some, and the kind that I grow, I like the sugar snap peas.
That's what I grew.
Sugar pod peas, I guess. The variety that I grow is sugar snap. That's uh-huh. That's what it's called, and it is not ination resistant. Ination is a virus, and so once it gets dry in towards the end of June, they get this inatia and they just dry up and they're done. But boy, until that time, I get a lot of peas.
Well,
what variety were you growing?
About, huh?
What variety did you grow on this that works
so
well?
You know what? If you give me 1 second, I'm just about here. I've got the, I planted Uprising Seeds, Bellingham, Washington, and they were called Cascadia snap peas.
I think I've grown those before too, and that might be a one that has been developed for the Cascadia region. You know, that can do it. So, Cascadia.
Well,
all right.
I planted some of the seeds that I saved from last year from a couple of different varieties, and then what I had left over from that. And boy, when I try to start them out early, they don't even come up.
How early is early?
Well, I put in my first peas. They were starts about 3 months ago. And even though they were starts that I got from New Seasons, they really had a hard time even growing.
Yeah, well, and I wouldn't recommend transplanting peas. There's just no reason to. Just put them in the ground. But here's what I do to get them germinated. And I don't recommend starting them until after March 1st. And what I do to help with that germination is I make little greenhouses for them in the ground. And so I plant a row of peas, and then I put small panes of glass just right on the soil. And so it keeps the cold rain out, but when the sun comes out, it does heat the soil, and I get great germination that way. And it's the germinating that's the problem. And then once they get going, they love that cold rain. They like it. So getting them germinated.
I think I might have grown four crops last year, and it was that late one that really did fabulous.
Nursery lovers love you.
The seed
industry, right? Right.
So when you put those pieces of glass on, Glenn, you have to obviously be pretty careful to check it out so that they don't start coming up underneath the glass.
Right. I'll let them come up a little bit, you know, but
just visible, right?
Yeah. And then
I wonder
then
about taking those plastic containers that you get like olives and stuff in and just putting one of those over.
It'd be the same idea.
Yeah, it'd be the same idea. Give them a little more room. You'd have some space there.
Yeah, you would want to, you know, you don't want to let them bake, you know, in a hot sun. Boy, they can, and they would dry out a little bit more, too. But I've never, that hasn't been an issue. I mean, I get the
glass. What about radishes?
What about them?
Well, can you still plant radishes?
Oh, sure. Sure. They're about 30 days. Yeah, so, yeah, it wasn't on my list, but.
Okay, great.
Thanks. Good. I wrote down that Cascadia.
I found my peas love the hot summer.
Yeah, great.
I'd water them a little bit in the morning, a little bit in the evening.
That's important. Don't want to let them dry out.
Right.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Bye.
Okay, Marilyn. Good morning. You're with Jim and Glenn on the Dirtbag.
Yes, I discovered in a conversation with my son in San Francisco that the snails that I've been throwing away in my garden are considered a delicacy in France. And about 100 years ago, they were brought to this country purposely to try to propagate. And now if you see these snails, if they're anything like 2 fingers wide, and you put them in a box of cornmeal for about a week, they get rid of their digestive situation. You simmer them for a couple of minutes just to make them firm, not to toughen them. And then dry them off and saute them with butter and garlic, and you've got escargot.
Wowee.
How about that?
Now you're taking them out of the shell?
If you simmer them, they'll come out of the shell easily.
I see.
And that's, you put them in alive?
Yeah, you put them in water that's come to the boil. Don't boil them hard because you'll make them tough, like a lot of other crustaceans. So isn't that good news? They serve them to guests with great élan, and they think they're wonderful. So they are the same species that they use in France for escargot. That's the point that I wanted to make, not just some garden variety, excuse the pun.
Not just some old garden snail, but escargot.
Funny thing is, it was only last year that I first began to see them here. All we had was slugs up till then.
Yeah.
But these snails with their shells are becoming more and more prolific.
Oh, yes. They've been showing up for
just like the
10 or 12 years. I've seen them increasing in numbers. So.
Yeah, like the carp situation. They were brought here, you know, to increase the protein situation.
Oh, yeah.
And now they're decimating all the native fish. Well, these snails are taking over our gardens these days. We might as well put them to good use. So that's my tip for today.
Well, that's good advice. If you can stomach it, I guess.
Right. Remember, you put them in a box of cornmeal for about a week, and then they clean out their insides. You know?
How many do you eat at a sitting?
I suppose it's as many as you can keep at once.
Well, how about
know.
You, I mean?
I haven't done this. Yesterday, talking to my friend in San Francisco.
Okay.
And his wife is a gourmet cook, and she's been doing this for years, serving them to guests. So, and she said, yes, these were the same whatever genus or whatever people in France have been enjoying for a long time. So escargot is the name of the dish. It's cooked snails.
So we need to work on slugs.
Yeah. What does your son's wife say about that?
save up your garlic and your butter and have
put
a
slugs
good time.
In some cornmeal and see what happens. That would be interesting.
All right. Thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks, Marilyn.
Well, I have to tell the story briefly. I
okay.
lived 1968. I hitchhiked to the eastern side of Canada and ended up on Brador Lake in Nova Scotia. And where the people I was staying with showed me how you could just go out into this lake. It was a sort of a salt. It was like an in-between salt and freshwater lake and gather the snails and boil them. We just basically boiled them. I don't remember doing much more than that. And pretty darn good.
Snails. So they did they have a shell?
Yeah. You pick them up off the bottom. The lake.
Pretty darn good, huh?
Yeah.
I've had escargot before.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's been a long time.
I don't know if I would. I suppose I'd try it again.
Yeah.
I'm getting fond of ants, but no, that's not true. Actually, you know, just a little bit here on the, you know, the weird side of life here. I've been working on this project, you know, Bridgetown Bees, trying to selectively breed for a winter hardy Portland queen. So we're just breeding from our colonies with our queens that survived last year. And we started last year, so now that we're on the second generation now. And so we'll see how many survive going into this winter. But in the grafting process, we're taking little larvae, bee larvae, that are about 12 hours old. So the queen lays an egg, and it's an egg for 3 days. Then it hatches into a larva. And we want them about 12 hours old. And then I'm making this short and sweet here. We might take 30 larvae, put them into some queen cells, and then take that frame of bees and put them into a queenless colony that we've set up 24 hours ahead of time. So a lot of nurse bees in there, they just fighting all over themselves to raise queens. They just need that to do. That's just what they do. And, you know, to get 30 larvae, you may bungle a few and you just... You know, they're pretty small. But what I do now to get rid of those is I just eat them. Because I need to clean the tool up, and I just get them off the tool. I just... they're kind of tangy. Yeah.
That's one of the weird side of things.
Is that the too much information there that they sometimes say? Oh, I hear they go good with escargot.
Well, there was another fruit that I wanted to mention.
Watch who you're talking about here.
Yeah. Going back to more normal kinds of consumption. You know,
yeah. We're almost done, Tammy. Just hang in there a few minutes.
This time of year, one of my favorite early berries. Strawberries are on, and also an unusual berry, honeyberry, is also ripening right now. And I suspect there may be a listener or two or more that have honeyberries. I really, really enjoy them. In fact, some have a flavor not unlike, say, a raspberry or a strawberry. I mean, we have a lot of different varieties. Brought them from Japan and from Eastern Russia and in Northern Japan and on the island of Hokkaido, they're actually grown commercially and quite a little industry there with honeyberry.
And they're called honeyberry because they look like honey.
They're called honeyberry because they're a relative of the honeysuckle.
But they're not honey colored.
No,
they're dark.
They're very dark blue,
yeah.
And they have blue inside. They would be similar to a huckleberry, in most people's thinking, but they have dark blue juice, which is just really full of antioxidants. So they're really an excellent berry that way. But they are a member of the honeysuckle family.
What is that?
Lanicera kamchatica is the...
Lanicera?
Lanicera, right.
And blueberry is vaccinium, is it?
Vaccinium, right.
Yeah, okay. Right. See, families matter here.
And then one of the neat things about honeyberry is that the honeyberry doesn't require acid soil, which is for blueberries more common, more
and required. And what's... I know we've had this plant of the month before. What spacing does it need?
It depends a little bit on the variety, but, 4 feet is plenty. Okay. They're small and very attractive shrubs. I look at them every day, and they're... beautiful. I mean, really, some of the varieties have like almost velvety-like foliage. We have a variety we actually call Blue Velvet and Blue Moon. They all have blue in their names.
Do they? Is it evergreen?
No.
No.
It's deciduous.
Okay.
And very hardy. I mean, right. If there are any listeners in northern Minnesota, you can
call in our next fundraiser.
Please do that. I want to hear from you.
Okay. Well, that's it for today. Jim, we'll be back in, what have we got, 4 weeks? Yeah, I guess it probably is this time. I haven't checked. July. Oh, I have it here on my notes here. We'll be back on July 9th, four weeks from today. And actually, we'll be doing a live August show, too. I think I will be back, so we won't have to record that. Great. Thank you all for listening. Thanks for the all the calls on the Garden Stumper, and maybe we'll see you at the movie. Tammy, thanks a lot. Jim, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Glenn.
We'll be back.
See you soon.
Be well.
I got a spade and a big axe and 100 miles square of land in Chernobyl. My old horse is weary but sincerely I believe that he can pull a climb. Well, I've moved into the jungle.
It's noon. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. It's time for jazz coming right up. But before we go there, I have one little announcement, and that is that this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver. Available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. Thanks for tuning into the Dirtbag. We'll be going very shortly to the noon news headlines, and after that, Nick is here to bring you some jazz.
Is my station, and the nation buys my call for me immediately.
This is KBOO Headline News at Noon for Wednesday, June 11th, 2014. I'm Diane Erickson.
And I'm